dedicated to HBO's Game of Thrones and George R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire book series. You're listening to Podcast Winterfell.
Welcome back, everyone, to Podcast Winterfell. Podcast Winterfell is a part of the DVR Podcast Network. Check us out at dvrpodcast.com. My name is Axel, and I'm here on a little late-night feedback. Plus, I kind of had a few thoughts that I wanted to go through. Might even talk a little bit about the trailer at the end, just because I'm excited for the episode. Now, I want to start out by thanking people. If you're new to us, we appreciate it. Give us an iTunes review. Support us on Patreon. Share us with your friends. We appreciate all that. That's awesome. We've only got a couple weeks left, but I also wanted to tell everyone that we will be continuing on the same schedule for at least 1 week after the season ends, and we're going to do like season wrap-ups. So Heath and I will do a pod that'll wrap up the season. Tim will do a call-in to wrap up the season, and then Mike and Tracy will do a wrap-up. Now, you might have noticed, too, that Donald hasn't been around lately. He's had some scheduling snafus, but we always leave it open for him. So hopefully we can have that coming. But follow him on Twitter, at Donald Jr., and he's usually giving his opinions. All right, so there's that. What else did I want to cover? The leak. I can't remember. I believe it may have been Spain accidentally played the wrong episode. People tuned in thinking they were going to watch episode 4. They got episode 5 instead. I honestly kind of feel bad for those people. That's something that people are not bringing up. Everyone's like, oh, they got to see the episode. Well, maybe I'm totally wrong and it was like a replay or something. But if someone did like DVR that or tune in and then they're like all of a sudden have just been spoiled on an entire episode and they've gotten the next episode, which the only thing I've heard is that it's great. So if... you know, I feel kind of bad for him. But anyway, I just want to say, you know, no one's been spoiling stuff and we appreciate it. You know, I think people know that who follow spoilers and are part of that community. I don't know. I think people are pretty cool about stuff. You know, there's no reason to do that because there's no fun in it. Like if you want to really discuss it with people, then discuss it with people that saw it. But I have not seen it. So nothing tonight will be covering that, just so you all know. And it's an interesting story, though. Why does that keep on happening? You know, they're hacked and it's coming. There's a story behind that. All right, let's do this. Let's start out with some feedback from Gina. You know nothing, Arya Stark. Yes, everyone thinks she's actually on to Littlefinger's setup to pit her and Sansa against each other. I would believe it if she and Sansa had had that conversation in front of him, but they didn't. Arya was acting like a brat. She really doesn't understand or know what Sansa's gone through or what Sansa and Jon went through to get Winterfell back. It seems like her bloodlust is totally lacking direction right now. And hopefully next episode it will be set straight onto death to Littlefinger. Hashtag. Oh, I should have said the hashtag first. This whole thing has got a lot of play this week. This is like Steve Bannon. People like, they fired, they quit. It's like, does Sansa know? Does Arya know? Does Littlefinger know? And then Shadowcat was talking about how she thought that the scenes were originally meant to be in the opposite order. So that means that the confrontation would have happened before the no, after the sneaking around and watching Littlefinger, which would have brought it to a different place. But in my mind, I'm not quite sure. It's so complicated. I'm not sure if this is what she meant. That did make sense because it then leaves it open now for Arya and Sansa to kind of know what's up, since the order is kind of reversed. Like, you don't know whether Arya had that confrontation and then went and followed Littlefinger because of it, or that confrontation actually led to a further confrontation and a different agreement or something. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, I'm a little bit, I do feel this is a little bit, I'm kind of waiting this to pass judgment on it, because this just does seem like such a B plot thing, you know, but we've got a couple of those B plot things going on, right? I think, Varys is another B plot thing that's going on. What's going on with Varys? We keep on getting these scenes. Again, that scene with Tyrion. Now, I have a theory. This is a supposition based upon... I mean, I think it's pretty obvious at this point that Varys keeps on saying this, right? Now, either he is communicating a theme, and the writers are being a bit lazy about having him communicate this theme over and over again and have us not think that this at some point will affect the actions of his character. So, based upon that, I do think that something is going to happen with him. Now, I remember in an earlier episode of History of Westeros, I was watching it live on the YouTube, and Aziz was saying that he thinks Varys would kill a dragon. I thought that sounded like an awesome idea, because to go on later, Gina also brings up that she thinks that Cersei is lying about being pregnant. But she does say if she is pregnant, it's worth noting that the pregnancy of queens and or survival of their children does not end well on the show. Lyanna, Dany, Talisa, Rob's wife. The only birth we've had where the mother and child survive is Gilly and little Sam. I'm trying to think of that. Is that true? I think that might be true. Then she says, bonus points if Cersei is pregnant and the child is born a dwarf. Which a lot of people have said that. I don't know if they would go there or whether that would... I mean, it would set Tyrion up to potentially be able to be a father. That would be kind of cool. But I think that that point... I don't know if that really fits. I think a lot of people, I'm just trying to say other people have said that, and I try to fit it within the context of it. And it seems like it makes sense, but I don't think that that's a point of Cersei. Like, the childbirth thing is, though, right? Like, that Tyrion killed her mother, their mother, right? So if her baby killed her, it being a dwarf, how that relates, you know, to Tyrion, I guess it does. You know, it does, because she has obviously has hated him because of that, similar to their father, right? She's judged him like that. Okay, I understand that. I'm just talking these through, people. You know, it's a late night and I just decided to do a podcast, so give me a break. But I'm kind of digging this. But anyway... the Varys and Cersei thing, I think they might be working together. Another thing I wanted to point out upon my rewatch, I think I watched it two other times, is when Jaime comes in the second time to talk to Cersei, she is talking to Qyburn, or maybe it's the first time. I don't remember. I'm sorry. But she, at one time, she's talking to Qyburn. And they have their little thing. And, you know, he says, she says something like, that's not necessary now or something, right? I feel like something's going on. I feel like this is like Tywin letter writing. I don't know. I'm just saying. Like, look at last season. Cersei is always ready to do the big thing. And this whole thing with telling Jaime she's pregnant, I don't know, that's why I feel this whole episode was a little strange. Because you have both of these sides agreeing to this, some sort of this truce. You have the guys going off past the wall, the superhero team up. Why? To bring back a white? It doesn't even really make sense. I mean, I don't know. If they'd waited a little longer, Cersei might have just said, yeah, okay, I agree. Let's go fight them. Like, or let's bring me up there on a dragon or something. You know, somebody had mentioned that. I think Jack Klumpus may have said that on the Twitter. I don't know. That's why I'm saying, like, this whole thing with Cersei and Jaime feels fishy to me. And her kind of turning from that early, when I watch it again, I notice it too. The first conversation, she's basically saying, like, whether it's White Walkers or dragon ladies or princess, we'll either slay them all or we'll die trying. And then I guess she finds out she's pregnant and it totally changes her. But the way that we don't get a scene of her by herself finding out that information, right? We are told that information by her telling it to Jaime. And really, if you think about it, that scene is from Jaime's perspective. In a way, if you watch it, it's even shot from Jaime's perspective. Even in the choices of the close-ups or the wide shots or the two shots, it's based upon the textual information from coming from Jaime, not from Cersei. So, I just feel like something's up with this. Just like the same way. Now, I don't know if I feel in this way. I feel more the kind of the guiding hand of Dan and Dave. In the other one, I kind of feel like the, what the, huh? As time has gone on, I found this, I don't know. I found this adventure, even though I'm dying to see it. Right? Like, that's the problem. It's almost like, I was listening to a podcast and somebody said this, I can't remember. It's almost like too fan servicey. Like, of course I want to see all these guys go on a ranging journey past the wall and meet whites and white walkers and whatever else. And come, of course I want to see that. Are you kidding me? I'll see a whole season of that. But the reasoning behind it, even when I rewatched that scene, it was like, it was also something that I didn't mention in the original cast with Heath Snowlo, which is that for Tyrion, it was kind of a turning point. That scene was important because he was kind of coming through in a way that he is actually successful, which is more political and outthinking people. He's not a good general, you know, and he shouldn't really be involved. Like, I don't even know why he was at that battle with Jaime after what he had done. Like, just leave him. Someone's going to tell me that it's typical for a hand to be there. And I say, okay, maybe I can understand that, but it just seems weird. I just find this, this journey, a little bit strange. I may have lost my train of thought there, but give me a freaking break, people. Game of Thrones. Live on podcast Winterfell. What was I talking about? Oh, okay. So yeah, let me wrap that point up, which is this journey. The scene. Okay. Yes. That was a bit of Tyrion, reclaiming himself. And I like that. It was subtle, but but then again, I still don't understand this plan. So I just want to walk my way through it. Okay. So they realize from Bran's note that they really don't have time to take care of Cersei. Even though they know they will eventually defeat her, right? They're confident of that. It's going to take too much time and too much resources. So they want to go to her. Tyrion says, I will go to, I'll go to Jaime. He'll listen to me. And he's going to say what he said, which is, you know, you're going to lose. The White Walkers are coming. This is real. We need to declare a truce for now. And you don't need to bend the knee, right? That was part of it too, right? We'll figure that out like later. But we need to declare a truce. And in order to prove this to you, okay, we're going to go and we're going to get a white and bring it to you and show you that the dead do live. Okay. Besides, also, they don't know this, but we know this, that there's a dead guy walking next to her 24 hours a day by the name of the Mountain, right? Sir Robert Strong. She already knows that dead people come out, you know. All right. But she doesn't know about the White Walker. And when Jaime says it to her, or she mentions it in one scene and then he says it to her again, right? She accepts it. And then kind of, that's more about the pregnancy. So this is their plan. So then John and them go and they go. So now I've said it out loud and let's think about it. This is not a smart plan. This is really a dumb plan. And I wonder if it's supposed to be a dumb plan. Am I being an apologist? I said I was going to start a new Twitter account called @DanAndDaveDefender. It's just not a smart plan. First of all, I don't understand the whole part about the white. Like, you got Jaime to talk to her, and that actually accomplished the whole thing, right? So I guess they couldn't send a raven to John and say, hey, look, you don't need to go. She's kind of open to it. We may be able to figure out a different way to do this, because if the threat is so imminent, I'm sure she'd be willing to send a battalion or something of men to go see. So you don't have to go in this small little party of dudes with hopefully some dragon glass weapons. They look like they were mining them in time. We know time is elastic now. So, right. But we learned that from Lost anyway, right? Past, the future, and the present are all one. It's just a perspective. But anyway, this is a dumb plan. Because of the small amount of dudes that are going, what's their purpose to trap? Have they talked about how they're going to trap it? Now look, again, I don't want to be nitpicky because I don't really care. I'm happy. And also, you got to know something about me is I am a great purveyor, and I enjoy film and television, which kind of allows randomness or people to make mistakes. Like people make bad mistakes on purpose. I think that's a good writing. So I'm just saying this could be they could be headed into something where it's proven that in the same way that the type of threat that Dany poses to Cersei is the type of threat that the Night King poses to all of humanity. Even if they all got together, they couldn't defeat him. And I just have some kind of feeling that might be what's coming out of this in some way. Now, I don't know. Right. I've talked about in the show that someone could actually make a deal with the Night Kings. I have no idea. That's just guessing, just like for fun saying shit. I do not think that's going to happen, or there's nothing that substantiates that. But just kind of a fun idea to think outside the box from a story perspective, because that's what I enjoy doing. Like kind of looking at different ways a story could go. And sometimes when you do the Seinfeld thing, right? If you ever watch this documentary about the making of Seinfeld, is when Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld kind of realized that the way to accomplish what they wanted to do is they had to flip everything. They just flipped it. So instead of making characters that you care about, they made characters that are complete assholes. And instead of the characters' motivations being one of seeking happiness or love or joy or acceptance or anything, it's exactly opposite. They want to purposefully annoy, push away, repel. You know what I mean? Like, and they're completely have no, there's no consequence, nor is, do they have any guilt, which hence the reason why Seinfeld ends how it ends. So I like to think that way when I'm thinking about these shows, just kind of flip it. Like what is something that would be at first sound totally stupid? And that actually does sound kind of stupid, that the Night King would be like, hey, we want to make a deal with you, you know? Because like I've said in the past, you might think, and I can't remember, podcast or something I was reading brought it up again, the intentions of the White Walkers. What are their intentions? We saw how they were made, right? And that was actually, to me, an empathetic story. And what are their true intentions? And why are they attacking now? Why are they on the move? In an earlier episode, I remember somebody saying, it may have even been when they were at Craster's, that the White Walkers didn't start kind of attacking again until the number of wildlings had grown to be so much that they were kind of getting in their way. So based upon the cave drawings we saw, right, and the story we see, could it be, and that also, let's remember that the war between the White Walkers and the children and the First Men could have been very different from the war we're seeing now, because the children were so, they created the White Walkers, right? And they were also thus, I would think, as they are the creators also, like Al Gore of the Werewood, Worldwide Werewood Network, that they could communicate with them in some way, maybe, or know their intentions better. They have a plane in which to communicate on, perhaps, right? So basically, point being, I just try to flip it. Maybe that could happen with this in this world, in this story, that the thing we perceive to be this nameless, senseless evil actually, like, has a reason. And the reason is that that wall isn't just to keep them out, it's to keep them separated. Like, that's their land, and that's the humans' land. And they agree they won't move if the other people don't. But because the Night's Watch became so dysfunctional, right, and the wildlings, we've learned, like Mance Rayder was a former member of the Night's Watch, and I think in the show they've made reference to wildlings being once northern men, right? Maybe that's what this is all about. You know? Now, of course, I could be totally wrong, and I'm willing to see that. Actually, I like being wrong. It's more fun that way. You get surprised. If I didn't like that, I would have watched that episode pronto. But just an interesting diversion there. I just wanted to bring some of those things up. Okay, another scene I wanted to bring up. This is still Gina, John and Drogon. There was something really emotional about this scene. I know there are theories as to why Drogon was so fond of John, that he's a Targaryen is the most obvious. that somehow Drogon is a link between Dany's emotions and feelings for Jon is one. But I was wondering if it's something different. If it's a Drogon prophecy that Jon will ride him someday. And I think the only way this could happen is if Dany dies. Or maybe they ride him together. There you go, Gina. I don't know. I would have been more excited if it had been one of the other dragons. And if that dragon would have extended its wing to Jon to climb on and ride. Yeah, that's cool. So we've seen Jon touch a dragon. We've seen Tyrion touch a dragon. There's three dragons. They seem to be, they seem to potentially be people. You know, there is theories out there about Tyrion. And there's theories that are coming true here about Jon. So I think, it would have been cool. But it also would have been a little bit early for that. But then again, yo, they're certainly not taking this season slow. It was an emotional scene, though. And man, the special effects were great. Those special effects were really great. All right. Thank you, Gina. You're the best. The Hurricane of Feedback. Oh, she also mentions that she loves Gendry, which makes me want to talk about that scene. That was one of my favorite scenes this season. It was probably my favorite scene when he was like, just tell him your name's Clovis. And he just walks up. My name is Gendry. I'm Robert Baratheon's bastard. Our fathers were friends, you know? I thought that was great. And then I watched it again and I started thinking about it. And I was thinking about it from Davos' perspective about how this is almost like him finding his son again, you know? And that was kind of touching. And then to so quickly lose him to this adventure, he doesn't, again, he's going into battle. And could his son die? I hope not. I hope Gendry makes it. But also that Gendry, at that moment, in believing, in just knowing the stories that their fathers were best friends, right? And that they are both bastards. But in reality, Robert killed Rhaegar, who's Jon's real dad. And he also is kind of responsible for Ned's death, if you think about it. I mean, Ned's responsible for Ned's death. But, you know, if he wouldn't have called him there, you know, there's a little sip of water there, people. See, whenever I do something like that, I don't want to say something, but then I hear, like, Solo's voice in my head, like, little sip of water. It becomes a little thing, man, you know, a little tick. But anyway, so it's kind of sad, actually. And Gendry, too, was just thinking about Robert in the show. He must have watched a lot of him because that is just, he's really acting like him. And he's got the hammer, right, which is what Robert killed Rhaegar with. He knows how to swing it. And it's got the Baratheon symbol on it. I think someone on Twitter showed that to us, tweeted it out, which I hadn't noticed. I didn't look at it, but that's awesome. Did a really great job. He was so just sure of himself and that he wanted to leave and go on the adventure. I just loved it. But it was kind of sad when you think about it, that like their story. You have all these people meeting and getting mad at each other for what they had done to each other in the past. And then you have this story here where you're like, oh, that's so nice. Oh, yeah, look, they're meeting each other. And then, actually, no. Oh, damn. Gendry, actually, his dad is kind of responsible for a lot of the stuff that has happened, you know? So much of it. So kind of weird, but that was a great scene. Moving on. Okay, we got another email from Jenny. Oh, so on the matter of Rhaegar and Lyanna's possible marriage in the books and annulments have been taking place in our world for hundreds of years, so I would tend to disagree with Tracy about it being a modern idea. That is true. Be that as it may, I've held to the idea that there was a possibility in the books, at least, for Rhaegar to have taken her as a second wife, which of course would not require an annulment. Then his third child would be legitimate along with the first two Ella had given him. I'm not stuck on this idea, but it's a very Targaryen thing to do, don't you think? Aegon the Conqueror had two wives, so why couldn't Rhaegar? Okay, especially if it also meant fulfilling a prophecy. Great podcast, guys. I love listening to all the shows you put out each week. Thank you, Jenny. We appreciate it. We really do. This is our sixth podcast this week. Okay, little book stuff there. I think that this is fun, but I'm going to go back to what I always say. I don't think any of it matters. Look, I'm not saying that people who have been reading these books, who have been waiting for this time for 20 years, shouldn't talk about it, be excited about it. Not at all. That's awesome. You know, I'm all about do whatever makes you happy, you know, as long as you're not stepping on somebody else's fun, right? But in my personal opinion is that this story, because I'm a TV show, I know a lot of book stuff, but I'm a TV show watcher, is my opinion is that so much of this story is about, I've said it before, about moving forward, moving past these things. So it doesn't really even matter in the end. Actually, I think it would be kind of cool if John never finds out. That's what I think. I think it would be pretty cool if John never finds out who he is. And it never even matters. Right? That he does what he does without ever knowing that. Or anyone else knowing it. That's just me. Because I think that that's like the lesson here is subvert. If what George created is in some way a subversion, a deconstruction of the fairy tale, right? I know a little bit about fairy tale. I got an English degree. I took a lot of different classes. I took a class on medieval literature and fairy tales, all that kind of stuff, the Grimm, all that stuff, right? A little history thrown in. It was great. Then why would the crux of the story rely on people submitting to those old ideas and not subverting them, right? So I'm not saying that it doesn't exist, and I'm not saying that people aren't correct, that technically, yes, an annulment happened and that people had predicted and said, and that's awesome. But in the end, I just think that when the story is said and done, I don't know whether that part of it actually matters. Just saying. All right, cool. What else do we have? Gosh, I don't know. I think that's all the email I had. We had a bunch of, we had so many tweets. Should I get out the phone and look at a tweet? Or I did have, you know what I wanted to do is, I wanted to look at, some of the scenes again from a second point of view, and then maybe even talk about the trailer a little bit. Let's see, the Jaime and Bronn scene. Watching that again, something's up with Bronn. Keeps on mentioning about Jaime holding up his end of the bargain, and yeah, that was interesting. The Tyrion, the Dany, and the dragon. Oh, I wanted to talk about this. It's interesting, isn't it? The idea that that Tyrion saw all the damage that had been done by the dragons, then he tried to stop her from killing Randall and Dickon. But what's the difference, right, between what she had already done and doing it there? It's like intent and situation. They're not in battle, right? They've already submitted. But by not submitting to her, they're almost promising that they'll do that again, right? Like if she hadn't let them go, So she really didn't have any other choice. So I don't really think that this is a scene that's meant to show that Danny is out of control. And that's why I felt that Vary's reaction to it, telling the stories of her father, it's very different, you know, because she didn't do it to any of the other men. She gave them 3 or 4 chances to bend the knee, right? She openly discussed it with in front of them. I think it was rather progressive way to deal with burning people alive. Okay, moving on. Let's see. Jamie returns to King's Landing. Oh, okay. About the Queen of Thorns killing Joffrey. Is that story related to what happens later? That's kind of what I was thinking about. How does this scene relate? How does Jaime telling Cersei that news relate to later her concocting a perhaps fake pregnancy to kind of lure Jaime in or whatever? Because Jaime's the one who convinced her not to hurt the Queen of Thorns. Is the lesson that Cersei learned there the same lesson that the Queen of Thorns told Dany, to be a dragon and just take them out? I don't know. That's what I'm saying, man. Something's up here, yo. Something's up. I'm telling you, something's up. We already talked about that. Bran sees the White Walkers near Eastwatch. This was kind of cool. I notice now that all of the ravens were getting those eyes. So was Bran in control of all of them at once? That was kind of cool. Sam overhearing the maesters and then pleading with them. Again, I was thinking about that more so. And I just got to say, and when I watched it again, you know, Sam's got to do what he's got to do. But I do want to, hey, I want to echo what Matt said. On the great Cleft Notes that he did about really good point, Matt, about how important it was for Sam to get there. That's really important. And when I watched it again, I thought about that. He does turn around and look up and he sees that clockwork thing. And, you know, that was a big part of his story when we first met him, you know, getting made fun of and going in and then getting to be this point to get there and be the maester at the wall. Wow. You know? So yeah, I thought about that. So good job, Matt. Talked about the Tyrion and, Varys scene already. We talked about the whole plan. And then we have the Arya thing again. I do think that they could have switched these scenes. It's a good possibility. Let's see. That's about it. Cool. We got to the end there. John Davos, Jorah. That whole last scene, watching that again was so much fun. And they, I don't know. Okay. You know what? Let's talk a little bit about the trailer. Okay. So I haven't done this yet this season, but I watched the trailer. I said, hey, let's talk about it a little bit. Maybe what I'll do is I'll watch it again. Then I'll jump back on. Yeah. All right. You know what? I'm going to watch a trailer and then I'm going to come back. So you're going to hear a little bit of music. If you didn't watch the trailer, then this is the end of the podcast. Thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter at Winterfell Pod. You can email us at podcastwinterfell@gmail.com. Dara Gailey's. Now I will go. You will hear music. Then I will be back very quickly. All right, I'm back. So I watched the trailer. Oh boy. Okay, we're going to talk about the trailer now. All right, so I'm not going to go like shot by shot or anything like that. I just watched it once. It gave me an idea. It gave me some ideas. I want to talk about them. But the reason why I'm not doing like a shot by shot is because I feel like I'll deconstruct it too much. And I do like the surprise, but it's fun to talk about it. So it looks like the episode only showed a brief shot of Dany and Tyrion. It showed a shot of Winterfell, Arya, Sansa closing a door. But the majority of it was the journey past the wall. And it looked like on the journey past the wall, so they see the mountain that the Hound described, right? That looks like a, what he said something, looks like an iron head or something like that. We see that. But every time else we see, it looks like they're being overwhelmed by White Walkers. How can they possibly escape this? This is what I'm trying to say. This seems like, how could they escape that? Something else maybe is going on. I don't know. Is Bran going to show up? Maybe Bran will show up in some way and help them. But when I see them, like when I see, there's a shot of like Jon and I think it was Tormund, like just running, and you see all the dead running alongside of him, already keeping up with them. It makes you think something else has to intercede. Could Dany come up with a dragon? Maybe that's a part of it that we don't know about. That Danny's actually going to go there and save them. Oh, that would be interesting. Okay, that would be kind of cool. How else could they get out of it? Talking to them? Communicating in some way? Making a deal? We've seen a deal happen last week. Was that foreshadowing or letting us be open to something like that happen? Possibly. Could Thoros or John or Barrick display some sort of power that allows them to overcome the White Walkers? That's interesting. I just don't know why they ever had that plan. How are you gonna? I mean, these things are like ants, you know, we're not just randomly seeing one White Walker. I don't know. Okay. I'm going to leave it alone. Okay. So they had Arya's voice saying, are you scared or something like that? And then Sansa closes the door, which makes me think even more that they're setting up Littlefinger. That's too convenient. It was almost horror movie like. That was a little weird. Again, we got to remember, I want to say again, I don't think Dan and Dave don't cut these trailers. This is the marketing department. It's the same thing with the coming next week, because a lot of are previously on. The previously ons and the coming next weeks are the marketing department, the same people who do the commercials or the scenes they release on YouTube or Twitter, any of that, or photos, any of that kind of stuff. That is not generally, showrunners don't have control of that. I think it's really rare that, I don't know if it's really rare. It probably is really rare. I'm trying to think like who had, and like Damon and Carlton, we know didn't have control over that stuff. They always said that. Though they try to influence, but even on HBO, you know, well, I can say, look at the best example is Matthew Weiner from Mad Men, where the Mad Men coming, if you've never watched Mad Men, it would be like next week on Mad Men, and it would be like someone opens a door, someone pours a coffee, someone runs down a hallway, like you just see feet, you see someone say hi, and then it would cut. So it was like they never gave anything away, but he was notoriously secretive. Anyway, I just wanted to make that point. every once in a while, it's good to remake these points. My perspective that I'm coming from is that's a reason why I don't watch too much of it again, too, is because I know that this isn't like Dan and Dave were like, hey, let's make a really cool, trailer. They don't do that. It's a marketing department. What else did we see? Oh, Dany and Tyrion. We didn't see anything Cersei, Jaime. We didn't see Theon. We didn't see Euron. I didn't see Sam. So what were Tyrion and Dany talking about? That's what makes me think that maybe they show a little bit of that and then they're in peril like that. You know, look, you see your heroes in peril. You have to start thinking, how do they get out of it? Or are they going to succumb? Could they all die? I don't know. That'd be crazy. No. I'll tell you what, that would be awesome. I'd be really pissed off because I love all those dudes, but, well, except for Jorah Friendzone. Not really a big fan of Jorah Friendzone. Maybe they become the... What a better way to show Cersei that the whites exist than all those guys become whites and go back and meet her. That'd be crazy. Anyway, I'm hyped. This is going to be awesome. It's an hour and 15 minutes long. I am definitely not going to be seeking out the episode before Sunday. So Heath and I will be back Sunday night on the initial reaction. We appreciate the downloads. We appreciate iTunes reviews, sharing, whatever you do, become a patron. Only a couple weeks left of this. And again, we'll be doing at least one extra week of the schedule. We've still got a lot more podcasts planned. We're not shutting down after the season ends. You're going to be getting... We got plans. You're going to be getting a couple different podcasts as well as more podcasts. Winterfell. Podcast Winterfell is not going dark. We'll be consistently giving you stuff until the next season and beyond. So thanks a lot for listening, and Darragailies. Thank you for listening to Podcast Winterfell. You can find the podcast at dvrpodcast.com. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/dvrpodcast. You can email the podcast, podcastwinterfell@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Twitter @WinterfellPod and on Facebook, Podcast Winterfell.